Hello and welcome to CEO Matters, the Drum CEO Club's podcast series that delves into the hot topic amongst agency leaders. I'm Dan Mason, Executive Director and previously MD of global brand experience agency 2LK. We celebrated our 30th anniversary this year, but actually more important today is that we've recently transitioned our business to employee owned. So this episode is all about employee ownership, otherwise known as EOTs. I'm joined today by Louise Fisher from leading EOT specialist Baxendale, who are actually, in fact, an EOT themselves, which makes it really relevant and ideally positioned, really, to advise businesses on this transition. Full disclosure here, Louise and the team, brilliant team at Baxendale, have actually helped us through the process from start to end. So we're really grateful for them. As far as we were concerned, and something we learned, that you really do need some heavyweight advice in place to do this stuff. It's not the sort of thing you want to take on your own. And we think really for an agency, especially like ours, with actually a real focus on creativity and client experience and just doing great work, it's not the stuff we're used to. So you need good advice, and it's good to take talk to people like Baxendale. Also with me today is Simon Morton. Simon's founder of a great business in Leicester called Eiffel Presentations. They're recently transitioned to an employee-owned business as well. So we thought it was a great group of people to talk about transitions past, transitions new, and also some of the interesting things that you need to think about if you're even considering it. So one of the things we want to cover today, one thing we want to cover is what is an EOT? What does it really mean? What does it mean to an agency owner? What does it mean to employees of that business? And what effect can it have on clients as well? Why would an agency owner choose this route compared to a potential exit strategy through an internal buyout or an internal or a traditional trade sale? And also how an EOT could be used to align the interests of the team, the employees, and how to ensure a long-term growth and success that everyone wants. But this is one option we certainly looked at ourselves and have transitioned ourselves. I think what we're going to do is just turn to you, Louise, first, and just see if you can give us the kind of outline of what an EOT is. If nobody knows what an EOT is or doesn't understand what it is, what does it mean to be an EOT and what is it?
Sure. So employee ownership is where all of the employees of a business have a significant and meaningful stake in that business. And what that usually means is that at least a majority of the ownership in a business is transferred to its employees. So most of the businesses we work with use what we call an indirect model of ownership, where some or all of the shares in the business are actually held collectively for the benefit of all of the company's employees, usually using an employee ownership trust or EOT. And this employee ownership trust model gives the employees many of the benefits of ownership without people having to buy shares directly with their own money. Collective ownership, people don't put money in, but they have the benefits of the culture of the business. They have a voice in the direction of the future of the business. They get a share in profits without having to put money in their pockets. What that means, sometimes we call it naked in, naked out. So you don't have to put any money in. While you're an employee in the business, you get all of these benefits, but you don't take anything away when you leave.
So they're not putting in any money. There's no financial commitment from employees or team or directors or management at all?
When you use this indirect ownership model, no, nobody has to put any money in their pockets, because the process is that the current owners of the business, often the founders of the business that put blood, sweat and tears into building this business up over many years, transfer their shares from themselves personally into this legal entity called the Employee Ownership Trust, where the shares are looked after by a group of trustees on behalf of all of the employees in the business. And the principle behind employee ownership is a principle of fairness that's underlined in the legislation that set all of this up, that all of the employees of a business, when they're beneficiaries of an employee ownership trust, have to be able to benefit fairly and equally.
Okay, so in other words, they're not direct owners. Individuals don't own shares in the business. Is that right?
That's correct. And what the EOT does is provide stability of ownership. The trust will be there to continue the ownership succession of the business for the future. So there won't be share certificates flying about as people join the business, leave the business. It's there as a stable base to help provide support to the board of directors. So the operational arm of the business, which continues as it has previously before the business became employee owned.
Okay, so effectively it becomes less impact in that way. It becomes, the business can carry on as it was, if, in effect, with no big owner coming in. And that sounds like a really interesting kind of positive to it. What about, we've heard from, you know, what about the tax advantages of it? That seems to be a real advantage of an EOT. Sometimes, you know, dollars in the eyes make come business owners kind of go, this is a really interesting way to save a lot of tax. Is that a good enough reason? What real advantages are there on the tax side?
The tax advantages are good. There's no doubt about it. So as long as an employee ownership trust is structured correctly, if the majority of the shares, or at least a majority of the shares in a business, are transferred into an employee ownership trust, the selling owners will get their sale proceeds, their purchase price, capital gains tax free. And as so long as those shares are held in the employee ownership trust, the employees of the business will be entitled to up to £3,600 per annum tax free bonus.
It's really exciting for employees as well as sellers then, for the both sides. Okay.
It is indeed. From our experience, I would say, don't let the tax tail wag the dog. Because what employee ownership is really about is allowing exiting owners to fulfill their succession objectives for themselves and for the business in the future. So employee ownership is all about securing independence for businesses, ensuring that you can harness the creativity that you have in your business, for example, right. Dan.
Yeah.
Ensuring that the true north that's always been the purpose of your business can continue without some unknown third party, like you were talking about in the trade sale scenario, coming in and perhaps dismantling the vision and values for that business for the future.
And it secures it for the future. There's a real, especially at the moment, there's a real benefit to employees about security and that assurity of knowing that their jobs are safe as far as, you know, they are right now is a good thing. So all sounds fantastic. Where's the catch? Kind of one thing Andy and I ask ourselves as looking at this, where's the catch? Where's the problem? What businesses wouldn't look at this and go, let's just do that then? That sounds like a great thing to do. And why don't all businesses do it? Why isn't every business, you know, small to medium limited business doing this?
Lots of things in there, Dan. The first thing I would say is the objectives of the business are incredibly important. And the objectives that the exiting owners have for their next phase in their life also impacts on whether this model is the correct one for them and their business or not. So for example, if what you were looking for was a maximum return on your investment, so really you were looking for an absolute windfall, I would suggest that employee ownership wouldn't be for you. A third-party buyer, in general, is likely to pay you more for your business than you would be able to get from an employee ownership sale. Because the model that we use for valuation for employee-owned businesses is based on the ability of the business to produce profits over a number of years. So when you sell your business to an employee ownership trust, you're not going to get all of your cash out at once. You're going to be looking at, is there any surplus cash in the business? So is there a war chest that's been built up over the years? So cash that the current owners could have taken out of the business but haven't, left it in the business for a rainy day. That makes up part of your purchase price. And then you're looking at the profits that the business will be able to generate over a period of time. And most likely, in most of the transitions we work on, the owners are going to have to wait a period of time to get their money back.
So that's how they get the money back over many years, isn't it? So it's the acceptance of not an immediate payout. It's acceptance and a trust and a faith really in the business going forward and the employees and the management running it, that the money will be there in the future. But could be how long? How long do you think generally this happens?
Usually, in terms of a repayment term, we are looking, the owners are waiting usually between 5 to 7 years. So what we're trying to create is a balance between a fair reward for exiting owners for the blood, sweat and tears that they've put in over the years, and a repayment schedule for the business that's affordable, because the name of the game is to make sure that the business can continue to thrive, be sustainable, grow during this repayment schedule to the exiting owners, but ensure that the people who are leaving the business have enough money to be able to do what they want in the next phase of their life.
Fantastic. Thanks, Louise. That's great. This is a great time to move over to Simon, actually. I think my question here is for Simon. How long are you prepared to wait? And what, you know, could you have made more money on a private sale with Eiffel? Could that have been that's a pokey question, but it is that a question?
Yeah.
And a sacrifice you wanted to make?
Louise just hit the nail on the head. You've got a choice as a founder. And Dan, you went through this conversation with your co-founder. I did with mine. What are we looking to do? So, to Louise's point, we could have made more money if we'd gone to a trade sale. Now, of course, there's lots of other bits that hang around with that. So you might have an earnout element and various bits and pieces. But long and short of it is, if you can create a competitive environment for your business, go out there, do all the bits you've got to do, you could probably walk away with quite a nice, a nice number, a higher number than the valuation we got as an EOT. The reason we still went down the EOT route is quite personal. And I think this is always going to be sort of the process a founder that's kicking the tires of the different options sort of goes through. We didn't need huge amount of money. We had a magic number in mind. The business had grown, frankly, way beyond our initial expectations when we started the business. So we'd hit a magic number. Anything over that wasn't really that needed. I'm not going to turn money away, but it was then, once you've kind of ticked that magic number box, going, okay, well, we'll live a very nice life, assuming everything goes as it should do post this transaction, then you start getting into the details as to what you want to, why you're doing this. And this is when you kind of get into that whole legacy thing, which is a horrible word because I think it sounds incredibly egotistical, but you do have to think about the legacy you're leaving behind. And I didn't want to be the guy that had a pile of money but no mates left, because I'd stiffed them all in the transaction. I bored Louise with this because, similar to you, we leaned on the Baxendale's expertise. And a big part of the, when we were writing the letter of wishes, which is part of the process and what have you, is we just wanted to ensure that our people were looked after. And I think this is really pertinent to the Drums audience, is frankly, most creative agencies of all the different flavors that you've got out there, our products is our people. So if you don't look after your people, you probably haven't got much of a business to hand over. And also, I just needed the ability to sleep well at night, knowing that I hadn't pulled a fast one, hadn't, rocked up one more Monday morning going, interesting news, guys, you're now owned by this company, who might be competitors, who might go in and tear the entire business up, get rid of people, put people in roles that they didn't want to do. You had no control. So the EOT route, to something you've already said, Dan, which is when I shared this with our leadership team as a potential exit, we all looked at each other and went, where's the catch? And the only catch is there's a drip feeding of the money. But that's kind of addressed by the tax benefits. So, I'm happy.
You talk about personal stuff there, and that's really important. So certainly Andy and I looked at that, and there's much more involved than what you can read on, spreadsheets and numbers and tax and shares. And it is a complex backstory to it, but actually it comes down to, as far as I can tell, and certainly our advice would be quite a personal view around this. And what's a business owner's, seller's personal goals and objectives? And that's going to lead the way to what route you go, isn't it? I found that. I certainly learned that from you, Simon, and you know, you've helped me along the way. This time, how long has it been since Eiffel have been in EOT now?
Just over a year. So we, you know, it was the 1st of September 2022 we did it. So yeah, just over a year.
And anything in there that you've kind of learned since doing it and thought, I wouldn't have done it that way, or there was some lessons you've learned that you might better pass on to anyone considering it? Is there any big learners that you've got?
I think the biggie is, touch wood, everything thus far has gone better than expected. So we you know, this year, the year just gone, we hadn't anticipated being able to share any additional profits with the employees. There's this concept called Financial Freedom Day. And Financial Freedom Day is the moment where basically all the debt is paid down, and then suddenly it's in a very nice positive way. It's the ability then for all the employees, or co-owners as we call them, to enjoy the fruits of the business. What we'd built into our particular contract is, if we're flying in that year because of the hard work of the co-owners. So it seems a little bit mean just to kind of go, great, well done, keep working really hard, and we'll just keep yanking that money away until we're paid off. So over a certain threshold, we shared the profits. Long answer to the short question, but the result of that was that this year we were able to give a little bit, not a huge amount, but a little bit to every employee as a very early sign of what's to come, which was way ahead of schedule. Thinking about the year that we've had, it's been very, very positive. I think the only thing that we would do differently, and it would just be do more of it, is to communicate what employee ownership means in the day-to-day to the employees. Because I think one of the big challenges that you've got is that people, we got everybody together, we shared the news, we had one of Louise's colleagues, a guy called Simon, who's brilliant, came up and explained the whole process alongside us. It was really, really, really good. But then you walk away, and then the day-to-day kicks in, and immediately people are kind of going, okay, what does this mean to me? What's the change? And some people are expecting a big seismic change. If it's done well, not a lot does. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, that's the sort of ironic part of it, isn't it, Simon? That actually the design of it is for it not to have a huge impact, really. It's designed to not have that seismic change that should keep the comfort levels, but also it can give another message of, well, nothing much has changed, which is a really interesting kind of dichotomy that we've certainly found, isn't it? Louise, how have you found working with agencies like Eiffel and like 2LK? What's been the biggest thing that you've seen with an agency, creative agencies, compared to others? And are we the right sort of businesses to be transitioning to EOT?
I think creative agencies are particularly well suited to EOTs because we work in a creative business, and our creativity can be harnessed because of the flexibility that our employee ownership model gives us. So, for example, when COVID hit and we got to lockdown, all of our projects stopped. We all sat around the virtual boardroom table one Monday morning and thought, what are we going to do this week? And instead of being curtailed by shareholders who don't know what we're doing, as a bunch of employee owners, we said, we're going to make this work. Let's get all the creative juices flowing. Let's get some new ideas on the table. And we were able, as a group of people, to really harness the creativity in our room and go out and, you know, we started to develop projects and systems that we didn't think would ever be possible for our business in another type of business that didn't have such a creative ownership model and the flexibility that provides. I don't think we would have been able to weather the COVID storm like we did. So I think creative agencies like yours, where it's all about creativity, then you can really harness individual creativity because you have a group of people that all want the business to be successful.
So it's kind of a mindset thing as much as anything, isn't it? It's thinking about innovation, creativity of design and how we can think differently, which is what leads quite well into the agency. And it seems to me that an agency has to be quite flexible, quite agile in its movement. Certainly, as you say, about around COVID, but we've all had to be massively adaptable to changes. It feels, certainly for us, EOT felt like a very flexible approach. Would you agree, Louise? Is that, that to us it seemed like, hey, suddenly it dawned on us that we could sort of design this to suit the business and the future and the people in it, rather than be imposed on other a negotiation with another buyer or too many legal rules. Would you agree?
Absolutely, Dan. And I think that's one of the most exciting things about the employee ownership model is that we as advisors are not trying to shoehorn you and your businesses into a restrictive model. We can say to you, look, what are you looking for? We can tell you the parameters within which you have to work. But other than that, we can create something that is bespoke for the business, bespoke for your employees, reflecting the vision and values that are going to be there for the next phase in the business's history, along with hopefully a purchase price and a repayment schedule that works for the exiting owners as well. So flexibility is absolutely key. You know, we it's structured around a few legal principles that we have to follow, and everything round about that then can become particular to 2LK or particular to EIFL, depending on your business's own circumstances.
That surprised me, I have to say. When we started the process, and I think it does shines a light on the skills that Louise and her colleagues bring. But yeah, sort of any good advisor will approach it with the, like, there's some fundamentals that need to be in place. But how do you make this really, really work for you?
That's interesting. And how have you made it work for you, Simon? Because obviously part of this sort of, this is all part of an exit really, isn't it? And it's a staged long-term exit strategy. How have you found stepping back? How's it been for you in terms of doing what you're actually, the whole purpose of this is to step out really of the business long-term, but in a way that's careful. How have you done? How have you coped with that?
Two sides of the same coin, really. So the first, we approached this with a view to exit full stop. And we actually looked at three options: trade sale, which is the traditional one, MBO funded, possibly through private equity, and then EOT. Leading up to the conversation I had with the leadership team, I was putting all of the blocks in place to ensure that as and when I exited in whatever form that might be, the building blocks were firmly in place. And I think having done that, the EOT has just meant that, frankly, I'm doing a day a week now. I'm really hands-off. So in terms of the positives, it's because we put all of the basics in place, EOT or whatever you're going to do, you need a strong leadership team in place. You need succession plans. You need the right people in the right places. Get those fundamentals in place. And then actually the transition works really, really well. On a personal basis, it's kind of careful what you wish for. That sounds horribly negative, but there have been times, increasing number of times, where I felt like a bit of a spare part. And occasionally you kind of go, bloody hell, what does this feel like? And then I have to remind myself, that's what I did this for. And you've kind of, it's a peculiar feeling because the business, since I stepped back, the business is flying like never before, which is a little frustrating. But as a result, you do kind of feel like the old guard, and the new guard is just pushing ahead and doing a great job. And your ego and your muscle memory and all of the other things that you have as a founder over those many years kind of have to, you know, sort of evolve a little bit, otherwise you'll send yourself looping.
So how does it, okay, so this is interesting. So this comes back to, there are options for sellers of agencies to keep some of the business. And this comes back to what, maybe Louise, you could touch on this and what we mean by a hybrid model EOT compared to a full EOT. That's a question that came up very early on. Maybe just tell us about the difference between those two.
Sure. So indirect ownership model I was talking about earlier, where an employee ownership trust is used to hold the shares collectively for all of the employees, for the benefit of all of the employees in the business. 100% employee ownership via the EOT is one model that some businesses use. Then the flexibility comes into play, where you can have your employee ownership trust own 100% of the shares, so buy all of the shares from the original business owners. You can have a situation where your employee ownership trust buys a majority of the shares for the benefit of all of the employees. And then there's another chunk of shares, and this is where our hybrid model comes in, Dan. And there are two elements that can make up this hybrid part of the model. So if you remember, 100% ownership is all the shares owned by the EOT. Hybrid is a majority of the shares owned by the EOT with this bit owned by other people. Again, it's flexible depending on how you want your business ownership to be structured in the future. Sometimes the exiting owners will decide that they want to keep hang on to some shares, either because, you know, to use your word, Simon, they have this sense of legacy, that they want this kind of legacy ownership in the business to be able to keep connected to the business as they move away from day-to-day involvement. Or sometimes what we use is what we call a share incentive scheme for employees to incentivize employees within the business to own shares directly. So to use some of their own money to get some skin in the game, if you like, so that they can get return like dividends, or if they could sell their shares to the employee ownership trust in the future, for example, to be able to get a return on their investment in the business. So the hybrid model can be very flexible too, as long as a majority of the shares remain in the employee ownership trust. Some shares can be used to incentivize employees, and some can be held onto by the exiting owners, as I say, to keep this connection to the business.
And Louise, is that what we're talking about around EMI? Is that what you mean through that? And is that unique to EOT, or is that something that business owners can look at regardless of that?
So an EMI scheme, or enterprise management incentive scheme, is to enable small to medium-sized UK businesses to incentivize really the next generation leaders in their business. So to say, look, buy into this business, help us grow it, and then you will be able to see a reward. Okay. Often an EMI scheme in a non-employee owned business is used when a business is heading towards an exit. So it's to say, we're thinking about a third party sale. We're going to give you some share options or some shares in this business, you next generation leaders, and you'll be able to cash them in when we sell this business to a third party. It's a slightly different scenario in an employee-owned business, because what we're saying is, we're going to give you some options in this business. We want for everybody's benefit for this business to grow. And at some point in the future, when the business has grown and your shares have increased in value, the EOT will buy your shares back. So it's not about a third party. It's about using the employee ownership trust as a share warehouse to be able to people to buy shares, sell shares back to the EOT. And that's where the stability of ownership via the employee ownership trust really comes into play.
So it sounds like, Simon, what do you think about this? It sounds like, you know, there is always an argument that a business going EOT should be 100% owned by the employees and no individual should own any, because there's understandably some kind of conflict, strong word for it, but there is some conflict between private ownership, or are we doing it for all the employees? Where does that stand with you? And it seems to me there should be some entrepreneurial spirit within the business and remain that. Is that the route you took?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, Lisa, my wife and I, sold all of our shares, 100%. So we were completely out of the business. But we only allocated 51%, which is the minimum we can do, to the EOT. Remaining 49% we set aside for the EMI scheme that Louise shared. And the EMI scheme we've used within the business to, in the nicest way, sort of recognize and reward the people that are going to drive the business harder than the general population. And this isn't, and it was something that we knew we had to manage in terms of communicating this sort of sensitively, because the fundamental principle of EOT is everybody benefits. But we all know that there are going to be some individuals either historically have done this or in the future will be doing this, that that are going to work harder, are going to come in with new ideas, new creativity, just basically push that business forward. And it felt fundamentally unfair that they got the same slice of the pie as the people that, in the nicest way, just kind of rolled with it. What we did is we put these in place, and it's for exceptional contribution. And by setting aside 49% of the business, we've not allocated all of that yet, but the allocation of those EMI options means that we can retain our great people, reward them when they're absolutely flying, but also hopefully even attract new people in because we've got this other flexibility as well. Doesn't take at all away from the principle of the EOT, because the EOT is about driving a business to the benefit of all. It takes a while to get your head around, but once it's in place, people get it. The final thing I'd say is that the EMI scheme is open to everybody. So if you suddenly go into another gear and start really making a difference, being that exceptional contributor, we've got a way of rewarding you above what you would typically have anyway.
And there's some big stats out there, isn't there, from the EOT community, of which there is. If you've not looked into, I would say to anyone, if you've not sort of explored it, there's quite a following in the community around EOT, and it's everyone's looking to talk about it. Everyone wants to help everyone out about in if anyone's thinking about it. So it's really important to sort of dive in and find out a bit more. One question I had, and certainly the experience we've had it around the people that we haven't talked about today, actually probably most important above sellers and employees, are clients, actually. And the interesting thing is, none of this is possible without our beloved clients. And we hinge on those successes for a payback and exit strategy. We certainly found talking to our clients really welcomed it. That's one question that we've been asked is how have clients reacted? And we found an overwhelming kind of really positive reaction to it. Have you found the same thing, Simon? Is it sort of, do they understand it? Do they get it?
They did. I mean, all you got to do is drop names like John Lewis in, and they go, oh, that. Right, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. What was lovely is that the relationship we've got with a lot of our larger clients, they weren't surprised when we shared the news with them. It's kind of like, okay, we kind of get that. You're that type of business where everybody was engaged and what have you anyway. So it wasn't particularly hierarchical, and they were dealing with members of the team all over the place. So it just felt like a natural conversation. There's certainly not been any negativity or any of, hold on, what's changed? Nothing at all. I mean, how did you find it then when you had those conversations?
I found it really interesting. And actually, the thing that we really noticed is that many of the things that Louise was talking us through and Simon was talking us through at Bastendale around what is needed, what's actual behavioural and cultural things is so important to EOT. And we certainly found that we ticked a lot of boxes before that. Now, I think that it might be quite a bigger shift for different sort of businesses that aren't already doing what we consider to be culturally sensitive things, looking after our people, sharing numbers, sharing performance states. So we found that the process was relatively easy because we were doing those things anyway. We were already, we're going down a B Corp route at the moment and hope to be considered that soon. So those sort of things weren't new to us. So we didn't find a massive jump because we were already doing a lot of things the way EOT should be considered and how it should behave. We certainly found that. There are technical sides to this, Louise, isn't there, that makes it can become still now. I talk to our team about how it works, what the technical sides are, what a trust is, what it actually means, and we're still learning. We only transitioned in November, and we're just sort of learning what trust does and how it works, and just trying to find our way. How do you think that's your advice, Louise, on how you guys are an EOT? How's it worked for you in terms of the trust and your objectives on that?
We've been employee-owned for 40 years. And Bastendale has had lots of iterations through that 40-year history in terms of the business, the structure of the business. We've been 100% employee-owned. We've had a hybrid structure where employees have been able to buy shares. And we're back to being 100% employee-owned with a different number of representatives. One of the amazing things about being employee-owned for all this time is the history that it starts to create. And you guys are in the process of making history for your own businesses, and hopefully, your employees, owners will be looking back in 40 years like I am and saying, look, what success employee ownership can be because of the flexibility it brings. And you're always learning at every stage in your history, you're learning how to make employee ownership better. And I think Dan and Simon, you've both said that being able to sort of engender this feeling of what employee ownership means for employees is so incredibly important. And it's something that you keep doing no matter how long it's been since you've become employee owned. You've always got to refresh that message about what employee ownership means to the individual employees in your organization.
That's really interesting. And it's I genuinely believe it exudes from a business culturally when employees are being considered for first and foremost, and an EOT just does that extra step. I really think that's the right thing.
Did it go as you expected, Dan, when you shared the news with the team? Because you kind of carry this thing around with you for a long time, don't you? And then suddenly the big reveal.
Well, it's interesting because actually we certainly found it an easier process to talk about. Certainly when we were looking at the other, and we did consider a trade sale route. And actually for us, it felt like a big, horrible, dirty secret. That's the honest truth. We just felt we had a view of this. Andy and I said, can we stand proud and talk about this genuinely? And in a private sale, all tends to be secretive. And in an EOT, it was quite open. We talked about it open with our management team and said, this is what we want to do. What do you think? Actually, it did go seamlessly. I think the time frame, we were probably optimistic around how long the thing takes. We were certainly saying, look, we can crack this in 3 months. And Back and Bell said, no, you won't. It'll be 9 months. And we said, no, come on, we'll get. They're absolutely right. It does take a little while, but it's done in a more open forum. And I think that's what's lovely about it. And those things have helped. For now, for us, it's more still trying to go through the explanations of what things are and learning those. But we're doing that together. I think that's – we're going to bring it to a close. But before we do, this has been really good. I've been fascinated to revisit it, actually, and talk about some of the stuff around EOT that we've been talking about for a long time. But I just wanted to ask you both kind of your real one nugget piece of advice for an agency, really looking at agency sellers and if they're looking at going down the EOT, what's the most important thing you would individually say to them, and what one piece of advice you give them? Louise, maybe we'll talk to you.
I think I would say that to agency leaders, if what's important to you is your independence, your creativity, and being unique in your market, is that you should explore employee ownership as an option, because it's a succession solution that allows you to harness all of those elements for the benefit of all of the people that are in your business and have helped you create that business probably over a number of years.
Fantastic. Simon, what about you?
I think it's probably make sure you've got all the bits in place. This is not something that you can wake up on a Monday morning and go, you know what, I've read something over the weekend, let's crack on with it. You've all the fundamentals that you would have done to make sure you had a good trade sale or MBO or whatever it might be also need to be in place for an EOT. You need succession plans in place. You need the robust business to transfer over. There's still due diligence that you need to go through. So make sure those fundamentals are in place. And just tag this on at the end, make sure you've got an advisor that you can lean on to take you through that process. Because this is not the job of an accountant or a lawyer. It's about an expert in everything around employee ownership. It's a broad church.
Fantastic. That's great advice, Simon. And we've certainly listened to that as well and taken that on board.
What would yours be, Dan? Come on. You put us on the spot. What's yours?
Good shout. I think mine is actually it's about speaking to people individually. Those people that are going to run the business for future, my advice would be have a conversation. It sounds like the simplest sort of thing. My best advice would be everyone is different. Individuals are different in management teams. So you might have 3 or 4 members of the team that you might end up treating them in the same way. And actually, people are different. People are incentivized by different things. It's not always about money. Some things are different. Some people's lifestyles. And you've got to consider people's personal lives, families. And that's what we're doing it for. So my view is have individual conversations. Spend a lot of time with individuals that you're expecting to contribute to paying that debt back effectively for many years. What do they want out of it, and what's going to drive them? So that's my little bit of advice. So I'm going to bring this to a close. Thank you very much. Huge thank you to Louise from Baxendale and Simon at Eiffel for joining me today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please do share and tag the drum. And listen out for the next episode. Thanks very much. Goodbye.